Hello, and welcome to the Degree of Freedom podcast. My name is Jonathan Haber, and today we're going to be joined by Peter Adamson, professor of philosophy at LMU in Munich and King's College London, and the man behind one of the most intentionally ambitious educational podcast projects ever undertaken, The History of Philosophy Without Any Gaps, a comprehensive review of the entire philosophical tradition. Regular Degree of Freedom readers and listeners know that when I started this project, I decided to major in philosophy. And one of the major influences for that decision was listening to Professor Adamson's weekly series, which is now close to its 150th episode. I had to take a break during Late Antiquity, episode 94 to be exact, in order to clear time to take 30-odd classes for my one-year BA. But it was from listening to the 93 episodes that preceded this one that I got my grounding in the works of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, as well as the pre-Socratics who came before the Big Three and the Hellenistic philosophers who came after them. And this grounding has proved critical for a degree focusing on Enlightenment and modern thinkers who all seem to be struggling to write never-before-thought-of footnotes to Plato. Now, The History of Philosophy is a podcast, a form of digital content created by a professor committed to teaching subject matter he's passionate about, and available free to anyone with an internet connection without costs, prerequisites, or any barrier to entry beyond interest. If those characteristics sound familiar, it's because of the same features that define massive open online courses. But while popular podcasts like History of Philosophy certainly have massive audience and are open to anyone who wants to listen to them online, is a podcast the same thing as a course? I explored the subject of education by podcast a couple months back on the Degree of Freedom website, but to get a better sense of how the worlds of podcasting and MOOCing might converge and diverge, let's hear from an educator and podcaster who knows his way around a dialectic. Peter Adamson, welcome to Degree of Freedom.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Peter, can you tell listeners about your background and talk about how the History of Philosophy podcast came to exist? And since I'm talking to a philosopher, apologies in advance for presupposing the existence of anything.
For example, the existence of philosophy itself. So I'm a professor of philosophy at the LMU in Munich, and my main areas of interest are ancient and medieval philosophy. So I guess more relevantly to this discussion, I'm also the host of a podcast, the History of Philosophy podcast, which I've been running since October 2010. And it's basically a podcast based on two other formats of podcasts that I was listening to myself, because I'm also a podcast fan, a listener. So one format is the kind of interview format, which is what we're doing right now. And I was particularly inspired by this other philosophy podcast called Philosophy Bites, where they interview professional academics on a variety of philosophical topics. And then on the other hand, I was listening to some history podcasts, especially the History of Rome, which has a lot to answer for because it's inspired a lot of podcasts. And the way the History of Rome worked is that it started at the founding of Rome, and then it just went through chronologically very slowly until he got to the fall of the Western Empire, and then he was done. So what I thought I would do is combine these two formats. So what I do is I go through the entire history of philosophy chronologically, starting with the earliest Greek philosophers, the pre-Socratics. But then every five or six episodes, I throw in an interview just to sort of liven things up and give people a different perspective from the one that I have. And yeah, so it's still going strong. It's reaching soon episode 150. And I'm in the midst of doing philosophy in the Islamic world. So I've done all of ancient philosophy and now covering people like Avicenna and Al-Ghazali.
And I should note, History of Rome is by Mike Duncan, which also inspired this podcast.
Actually, he's got a new podcast out, right, called Revolutions.
On Revolutions, yeah. No, he's working on the English Revolution now and bringing his gift for narrative to various revolutions through history. I've noticed most podcasters keep going until the podcaster can't stand doing it anymore or has kids. Well, the other podcasts are conceived of from the start as having a beginning, middle, and end. But yours is kind of a hybrid in that you've got a theoretical endpoint, but only if and when you've covered the entire philosophical tradition. So any idea when you think History of Philosophy will wrap?
Yeah, that's a good question and one that I get asked a lot. Basically, I don't have any plan to stop. And you're right that the end is not in sight. An end in the sense of reaching, as it were, now. Right? It's actually one joke that I sometimes make is that at some point I'll start every episode by saying, this week on the history of philosophy, this week on the history of philosophy, and I'll just cover an article that's appeared.
Infinite regress.
Yeah, exactly. I just never stop. I think in the first episode, I said I might stop with Kant. And even to get to Kant would be like many years down the road. And in fact, I've been thinking of some things that would make it take even longer because I may try to cover Indian philosophy after I do medieval philosophy. And that would add at least another year to the process. The other thing, though, is even after I stopped with Kant, it's kind of hard to imagine not covering people like Hegel and Nietzsche. Of course, a lot of people would like to hear about them. So basically, my attitude is I will continue for the foreseeable future. And in fact, even to get past my area of kind of actual interest and expertise will take me another 2 years almost, because I still have to cover the rest of philosophy in the Islamic world, and then I have to cover medieval philosophy in Christendom, so, you know, like Latin, using figures like Aquinas and so on. And I'm very interested in that, and I really want to cover that for sure. So looking more than 2 years down the road doesn't seem to make that much sense. So I usually just say I'm going to keep going until something happens to stop me.
And I'm just curious, for all the 100 and some odd episodes you've done so far, where do you see history, philosophy, and similar podcasts fitting alongside MOOCs and other forms of online learning that are delivered outside the traditional physical classroom?
Of course, a lot of the listeners that I have are either in academic settings, so they're people doing, say, undergraduate courses on philosophy, or I know that some fellow academics listen to it as well, which is a little bit unnerving because they're more likely to spot mistakes, I guess. And then on the other hand, there's people who are just listening almost like as a kind of entertainment. So that's the way that I listen to history podcasts. Like when I was listening to the History of Rome, I was basically just doing it for fun. And obviously you're doing something rather different. So you've got this very structured approach to using open access learning. And I think that's probably quite rare, although maybe you know differently.
Well, I have seen occasions when podcasts have been used as learning resources in existing courses, programs like Saylor.org that sort of curate learning, including philosophy courses. So I guess that's another question. Do you know of educational programs that are making use of history philosophy episodes as a resource, either traditional or virtual classrooms?
I mean, just anecdotally, like actually, I just got a tweet from someone on Twitter saying that she had just used the episode, I think it was on the Meno, on Plato's Meno, in teaching a class on the Meno. And I've heard from high school teachers that were doing similar things. There was even one teacher in the UK who had his high school students listen to a podcast, and then they had to answer questions about it. So it was very much a teaching resource in that case. I think that's probably pretty unusual for the podcast. I mean, I don't know about other podcasts. My podcast probably has tens of thousands of listeners, of whom maybe a few hundred are using it in some kind of very targeted or structured way. I think most people are just kind of casually listening to it. But I think that's good in a way. So I don't want to make it feel like studying when you're listening to the podcast. I want to make it feel more like a way of being entertained in a way that's hopefully also enlightening and enriching. So the idea that there will be a quiz at the end or something like that, I'm kind of glad that podcasts don't have that built into them the way that I guess a MOOC would. So a MOOC would involve some kind of coursework by the students, I take it. And the fact that my podcast doesn't, or podcasts in general don't involve that, makes it much more casual and light. I mean, people don't have to listen that hard if they don't want to. They can skip episodes if they want to, and so on.
And speaking of MOOCs, I know some of your colleagues at LMU have created a MOOC class. I'm thinking the professors behind Coursera's Introduction to Mathematical Philosophy, where, by the way, I saw your name making an Alfred Hitchcock appearance on one of the recommended further study slides. Where do you see what they've done and your project as being kind of similar, and where do you think they differ?
Well, I really think they're very different. So I would say that a MOOC is more like an attempt to offer what universities traditionally offer using a different kind of format. So obviously you have potentially at least vastly more number of students, but in a way it's like the same thing. So the professors or the instructors are offering some learning materials, which could involve lectures, and the students are doing something too, right? There may be writing essays or taking tests or whatever it is. And so there's a kind of interaction between teachers and students. Whereas I think a podcast is more like a radio program. It has more in common with that kind of media presentation or even a TV show than it does with a class, in my view. So I don't think of it really as an extension of my teaching exactly. I think of it more, in a way, almost more as an extension of my research. So the idea would be, I've done all this research, either research that I'd done in the past on some topics where I actually know what I'm talking about, or research that I've done fresh for the podcast, and then I'm presenting that to the listener the way that a show on like Radio 4's In Our Time, they get in some academic experts and then just talk about a subject, and then the audience thinks, oh, that's interesting, and that's kind of it. So it's much less structured, and I think the really crucial thing is that the listener isn't expected to do anything in return, right? That they're not being asked to do anything, and of course that means they don't get any credit. So a podcast isn't a way of getting credits in a university course, at least mine isn't, and I don't know of any straight podcasts that do that. I mean, to do that, you really need something more like a MOOC.
I think there's some thoughts that podcasts, particularly things like iTunes U recordings, might evolve in that direction, you know, but in a way that's a transformation of one medium to another. And speaking of, I'm curious, obviously your podcast is being framed as a podcast, as you've conceived of its mission and its structure and such, but do you see any other work growing out of what you're doing with history philosophy? Might this end up a book, or are you thinking of maybe turning it into some kind of online course or using the same material for an online course sometime in the future?
Well, actually, in a way, this is a new, more innovative thing turning back into a more familiar thing, because the podcast is going to be a book. So the script, and obviously this is only the scripted episodes, not the interview episodes, but for the scripted episodes where I'm basically just reading out a script about the history of philosophy, I'm taking those and turning them into books, and they'll start appearing with Oxford University Press next year. So the first volume covers up through Aristotle. So it's like the first 50 episodes or so will appear as a book, and then more books will keep appearing right along after that. By the way, going back to one of your other questions, which is how long I'll keep going, I think once I've committed to writing this series of books, it would be very weird to stop after medieval philosophy. So I'm doing this whole history of philosophy, but only up to the 13th century or the 14th century. That would be strange. So I think that will actually be a big push in the direction of continuing. As for turning it into something else that's offered online, I actually thought about doing a MOOC where the podcast would be part of what was being offered. But then when I looked into it a little bit, it looked like it was a lot of work. And although in principle, it's not a bad idea, the podcast is already about as much as I can take on just in terms of time and energy commitment. So really between my normal load of teaching and research and other things I do at the university and the podcast, I'm kind of already quite stretched. And so the extra labor of trying to turn it into an online course hasn't really appealed to me yet. But one could imagine, say, applying for some grant money to get relief from teaching or something like that, that would free up extra time to do that. I could imagine doing that sometime, I suppose, but I don't really have any plans to do it now. And as I say, in some ways, I kind of like the fact that the podcast is just a podcast, because it keeps the stakes quite low. And it means that the thing is more easily seen as a kind of entertainment that's also educational, rather than as a kind of education that might incidentally be entertaining.
Well, as you say, there are different formats and they accomplish different goals. But I think you're right. I think some of the best MOOC courses I've seen are ones where the professors were able to dedicate an entire semester just to creating that course. And so now that there's enough of them out there, enough people have taught them, there's an understanding of how much work they actually involve.
I guess the other thing about using the podcast as a core of a MOOC is that I never thought about it that way. So in a way, it's not designed to be a course offering. It's designed to be this very detailed look at the history of philosophy that goes in chronological order without any gaps, right? That's the slogan, I don't leave anything out. And there would be various problems with turning that into an online course. So just to take one example, some of the topics I've covered, you could go do the reading, like the primary source reading, and there'd be lots of secondary literature, right? So anyone can go to their library, get out a copy of Plato's Republic, read up some things that I suggested on Plato's Republic, or I could put it online. But if it was about, say, some topic in 15th century philosophy in the Islamic world, the only thing to read might be a very difficult monograph by some other scholar, and then books that are all in Arabic, or maybe even haven't been edited, never mind translated. And there's just no way to help introductory level students get at the material on which they'd be expected to write essays or be tested. I actually have this problem to some extent already with my normal classes that I offer on philosophy in the Islamic world, but it would be really exacerbated in the context of the podcast, because the podcast is committed to covering absolutely everything, pretty much whether or not someone could easily get access to reading about it. And in fact, even with something like Avicenna, I mean, he's the most important philosopher in the Islamic world, it's not that easy to get your hands on books by Avicenna in English translation. So I think there'd be other challenges if I was going to think about turning the podcast into the core of a course that was aimed at a wider audience.
You mentioned reading. That's another interesting phenomenon, that reading load tends to be heaviest for courses that are dealing with very old material. But you hit another problem when you get into the 20th century, is that there's a lot of copyrighted material and professors aren't really eager to assign texts that require some students to pay for something. Yeah. So you'll get much more fragmentary, kind of very, very recent works, and then obviously fragmentary ancient works that are difficult to find.
There's something else that I guess might bother me about doing an online course myself is that when I teach at the university, I put a lot of emphasis on interacting with the students. So it's a discussion, right? Very rarely lecture in a way that suggests that they shouldn't interrupt me. In fact, I would never do that. And try to ask them questions and get them involved, even if there's quite a lot of students. So if I've got 70 students in a lecture hall, I'll still ask them questions because I think it's more lively. And in a way, it's more philosophical, right? Because philosophy is better done via conversation than via one person talking and the other person listening. Now, obviously, there are ways you can do that online. So you can have online discussion forums. And even with my podcast, there are ways of getting in touch with me or leaving comments on the website. People can react to my episodes over Twitter, Facebook, right? So it's not like I'm just talking and not listening. In fact, I try to respond to comments from listeners as fast as I can. But still, because of the way that this project has started out as a podcast, by its very nature, it is mostly me presenting some material and the listener is mostly pretty passive. And I think if I were going to design an online course, I wouldn't start out with that. I would start out with something much more interactive. And so again, I think that would be a reason for me not to try to turn the podcast into the core of an online course or a MOOC, unless I could think of something else to supplement it with.
Switching gears to philosophy for a minute, for a field that's perpetually being declared dead, most recently by Stephen Hawking, there seems to be a lot of people out there who have not gotten the message yet. You mentioned your show has tens of thousands of listeners, and other podcasts like Philosophy Bites are hugely popular. And even a course titled Mathematical Philosophy, taught by two German professors, is drawing tens of thousands. Any thought as to why philosophy seems to be continuing to captivate these big numbers?
There's two questions there. One is, why is philosophy perennially popular in general? And who knows what the answer to that question is. Maybe it's just sort of an inbuilt thing that humans need to try to think about deep questions. But maybe the more tenable question for us to answer would be, why is philosophy so popular on the internet? And it's not the only subject that's popular on the internet. One thing I've noticed is that there are a lot of history podcasts. Partially, I've noticed that just because I'm a fan of history podcasts and I listen to a lot of them. But there's just something about history that lends itself to this mode of presentation, I guess because history, fundamentally, it's a way of telling a story. And philosophy seems to work very well in that form, too. Perhaps because it's conversational. So a lot of the podcasts that cover philosophy are interviews where someone's giving an argument and someone else is responding to it, like Philosophy Bites. And I think, in fact, one of the reasons people like Philosophy Bites, one of the reasons I like it, is that the interviewers are good at reacting to what the guest is saying. So the guest will put forward a claim and Nigel Warburton, the host, will say, but wait a minute, here's an objection. So they can talk back and forth. And it's not quite so clear how you could do a good podcast on, say, English literature, because unless you've read the books, someone can come along and tell you what happens in Hamlet, but really it's quite difficult to have an intelligent conversation about Hamlet or think hard about Hamlet unless someone has actually read the text. To some extent, I think that's actually a problem with covering the history of philosophy this way, because ultimately there's only so much you're going to be able to understand about Avicenna if you don't go read Avicenna. And the same is true for any philosopher. So I hope that my podcast will actually lead people to read these texts. But still, because philosophy is about argument, at least I can extract some ideas and some arguments from the text and present them to people, and they can think about them without necessarily having read the books or without having read them yet. And so I think that might be one reason why philosophy works so well in an online forum. It's because it's argument-based rather than being all about close reading of a text, even if close reading of texts is ultimately necessary if you want to do serious history of philosophy.
And for listeners who haven't caught the bug yet, can you give us your thoughts as to what learning philosophy offers people, especially those who aren't planning to dedicate their lives to studying it?
Well, it offers different things depending on which kind of philosophy you're doing. Probably the most basic thing that all philosophy offers is this kind of rigorous habit of thinking very carefully about things. And that's useful also in walks of life that don't involve philosophy. So I think that people who have studied philosophy at university, for example, get to be very good at presenting arguments, at presenting their thoughts clearly, and also at taking objections seriously, precisely because of this thing that I was just talking about, where philosophy is really all about the presentation and analysis of arguments. And that kind of habit of mind is very useful in any walk of life. I think specifically with history of philosophy, really in a way it's like doing any kind of history. So it gives you a sense of where we've come from and also a sense of how different things used to be. So one of the things I like best about history of philosophy is that sometimes the philosophical ideas that these very ancient men and women were presenting, at first blush, they just seem completely bizarre, right? So like some of Aristotle's ideas about how the cosmos is constructed, or have an episode coming up on a Muslim philosopher named Averroes, who thought that all humankind has only one mind that they share. So we've only got one intellect, and we share this intellect, and we think with it. And when you hear that at first blush, you think, okay, well, that sounds like he should be in a nut house somewhere. I mean, that just sounds completely wacko. And then to have someone come along and explain to you why a very intelligent person might have come to a view like that, I think that's very exciting. So the nice thing about history of philosophy for me is that it both explains where our own ideas and society to some extent have come from, but it also gives us this jarring sense of how different things were back in another period.
Well, Peter, I'm looking forward to catching up on all the episodes I've been missing this year while working on this project. But I want to thank you for your time, and I want to say how much I appreciate your being on Degree of Freedom.
My pleasure. Good luck with the project. I'm looking forward to seeing how you get on.
That was Peter Adamson, professor of philosophy at LMU, and the man behind the podcast History of Philosophy Without Any Gaps. And before we leave the subject of learning philosophy, which can tell us something about learning any subject, for some reason, the publishing industry has created a whole genre of easy on-ramps to learning about philosophers of note. For instance, you've got books like Kant or Aristotle or Plato in 90 Minutes, or various entries in the Dummies or Idiot's Guide or Imbecile series that try to turn dense philosophical text into digestible McNuggets. And then there are all those Harry Potter, The Matrix, Seinfeld, The Simpsons, and philosophy text, which try to attach a Platonic or Kantian gloss on the latest popular TV series or movie. Built into these types of books is an assumption that people need their philosophy sugar-coated and served up in bite-sized pieces, or that the public needs to be dragged into the subject kicking and screaming, book in one hand and remote in the other. No doubt there are some people who are resistant to what they perceive correctly to be complicated subject matter, but as the popularity of not just my guest podcast, but also shows like Philosophy Bites or Partially Examined Life demonstrates, there are a lot of people out there eager to take their philosophy straight with neither mixer nor chaser. And in the area of philosophy text for non-experts, a book I keep pushing on people, one that does not need Star Trek as a crutch, is The Dream of Reason by Anthony Gottlieb. Dream of Reason is a survey of Western philosophy from the ancient Greeks to the Renaissance, which ends just at the dawn of modern philosophy, which will be the subject of the second volume to the series the author is currently working on. Gottlieb, who's best known as the former executive editor of the British periodical The Economist, also taught at the New School in New York and is a contributor to the New York Times. While some of the Dummies or Philosophy and books I just mentioned offer breezier reads, Gottlieb's Dream of Reason provides remarkable sweep of in-depth coverage of both philosophers and philosophy without ever losing the benefits of humor and accessibility. And in case you're asking yourself why you should listen to History of Philosophy, read Dream of Reason, or do anything else to familiarize yourself with a supposedly dusty, and at least according to Stephen Hawking, dead subject, keep in mind that if you've ever studied anything in the past, that you've actually been involved with the study of philosophy. For as Gottlieb points out in his introduction to Dream of Reason, every academic field originated as a branch of philosophy, which is why we still award doctorates in philosophy, or PhDs, to people studying subjects as diverse as quantum physics or Jungian philosophy. But once a branch of philosophy becomes fruitful enough to break off as a separate discipline, physics and psychology being good examples of this phenomena, it hasn't taken long for practitioners of these supposedly new fields, such as physicists or psychologists, to forget their roots and mock philosophy as impractical, whose practitioners have their heads stuck permanently in the clouds, an accusation first directed at Socrates, by the way, in a stinging Greek comedy called The Clouds. So to all of you busy studying practical subjects like marketing, an offshoot of psychology, which is an offshoot of philosophy, or computer programming, which is nothing more than the latest iteration of Aristotle's logic, it won't do your mind, or likely your career, any harm to familiarize yourself with the roots of everything you are learning or likely will ever learn. And with that recommendation, it's time to sign off for the week. But I hope you join us next week as we continue talking with educators whose success might inform work going on in the MOOCiverse on the Degree of Freedom podcast.